From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
If there's one thing everybody's complaining about, and myself included, I enjoy complaining, Joel, it's HF band conditions. Because, Joel, they're lousy, frankly. I mean, at least the bands that I enjoy. And you keep hearing speculation that, oh, we're going into an extended solar minimum and things are just going to be awful for decade upon decade, which is not necessarily true, but they're kind of awful or at least mediocre right now. So how do I cope, Joel? How does the average ham cope with this?
Well, there is a lot of complaining going on. That helps a lot, as you know.
Complaining helps.
Yes, I think it does. And there's some bands which all the signals that are propagating are people complaining about the propagation. But actually, the poor conditions mainly manifest themselves by a reduction in the maximum usable frequency for HF ionospheric propagation.
Otherwise known as the MUF.
The MUF,
yes.
And this makes it less likely that a given frequency will support propagation between two points with a usable signal-to-noise ratio. Now, note that this doesn't mean things won't work. More likely, they won't work as often or as well as they would if conditions were better.
Well, that makes sense.
I chase DX a lot when I have an idle moment. And I've found lately that 20 meters, 17 meters, even 15 meters during the day have openings all around the world, really. Not at the same time, but I mean, there's times when you can communicate to people all around. So while it's not like it used to be, now what we think of in the best of times is 20 meters goes worldwide, all over the place, all day, 24 hours a day. That's about as good as it gets. Well, we haven't done that for a while.
No.
But during the day, 20, 17, and 15 meters seem to work reasonably well, 20 and 17 particularly, I find. And 30 meters, of course, if you're into CW, works well also.
I note that you don't mention 12 and 10 meters.
No, 12 and 10 meters are pretty thin. And what that implies is what you do as a counter to this is you tend to move to lower frequencies. That's sort of the first thing you can do. So you drop a band compared to what you'd usually do. In good times, during the day, 10 meters propagates wonderfully at very low noise levels with high signal strength, especially in areas of common daylight. So if both ends of the station and the path in between are in daylight, 10 and 12 meters are just wonderful in good condition. Doesn't happen so much now. Now, what does happen in place of that kind of is sporadic E propagation.
Yes, usually think of that as a 6 meter phenomenon, but
right,
not necessarily.
But because everything's kind of moved down, it also works on 10 meters and 12 meters. In fact, I enjoy the 10 meter contest only because, you know, that we talk about propagation being poor and no signals. Well, if everybody turned on their transceiver and listened and heard nobody, everybody would conclude there's no propagation.
Yes.
What has to happen is somebody has to call. So you can, oh, I can hear that person. The 10-meter contest and also the VHF contest, that 10-meter contest, the ARL 10-meter contest is in December. And it's very interesting because it's a time when people are on the air all over the place. And what you find is it isn't that 10 meters isn't open. It's that 10 meters isn't open everywhere at once. But the sporadic E clouds lately have been providing great propagation, sort of in the continent or between North and South America, or in some cases Europe and Asia, depending on which side of the country you're on. And virtually the whole day in daylight, you can find somebody to talk to 500, 1,000, 2,000 miles away, which is not like it used to be, where you find people on the other side of the earth, but at least it's open and you can make contacts. So if you're looking for working all states or even DXCC on 10 meters, there are enough countries around that even though you can't talk perhaps to all parts of the world, you can talk to enough to accumulate countries and states and grids, which you're now doing, I guess.
Yes.
So there's propagation. But the problem is you can't just listen. You have to call.
Yes.
And or another thing you can do is listen for beacons, because that tells you a lot. Although the beacons are fairly weak, and sometimes for a good sporadic E path, you need a little stronger signal than the beacon might provide. So a beacon is not always a good indicator.
You make a good point about calling. So many people will say, oh, the band is dead. Oh, well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. And on 10 meters, for example, I've been able to do what they call trans-equatorial propagation, yep. even now,
yep.
Where I'm talking to stations in Brazil and Chile and Uruguay and so on 10 meters. Granted, I'm using CW or I'm using digital modes, which have that advantage, but still, there are people to work.
Absolutely. So it's not like it's all gone away. It's like it's not working the way it does in the best of conditions, but it's considered a challenge rather than something to gripe about, and you might be find it's not so bad. And so if you're kind of wanting to work the same way, move a band or two lower in frequency where it'll work. And at nighttime, forget the higher frequency bands. 80 and 40 meters will be your friend. 160 also if you have an antenna for that. But the important consideration there is you want to work on a lower frequency band. It's not just a matter of turning your band switch. To be equally effective, your antennas have to be bigger and better because they're at lower frequency. So if you have your multi-band dipole that works great for long distance propagation on 20 meters when it's open, if it's 50 feet high or something, switch to 80 meters and it's less than a quarter wavelength high, and you're not going to be talking very long distances. You're going to be talking to people fairly close. You know, the signal will still go out at low angles, but it'll be a lot less strong than it will be on 20 meters at the same angle. So, you know, it really... may want to rethink your antennas as part of your strategy to move to lower frequency.
What about adding an amplifier?
That helps. I mean, that'll make your go from 100 watts to 1,000 watts. That gets you a little less than 2S units of additional signal. And if you're marginal at 100 watts, you will be reasonably good copy at 1,000 is the rule. The other thing that makes a difference is to change to modes that don't require as strong a signal. We
yes.
discussed some time back about the advantage of CW versus single sideband in that regard, that you get about a roughly 10, at least 10 dB enhancement in signal to noise ratio in the narrower bandwidth associated with CW if you turn your bandwidth down, and the station at the other end does also. So that's comparable to getting an amplifier, but a lot cheaper.
Yes.
Now, of course, you can do both, and now instead of 2S units, you're 4S units better off. So you keep these things accumulate, but changing to CW is a very easy thing to do, assuming you're, you know, good at it. And this, if the bands are dead, it's a great time to do CW practice and get better at it.
Yes, it is.
And then you can go from there into other kinds of modes, and this is where the new heavy signal processing modes such as FT8 that can operate at very low signal-to-noise ratio, negative ratios or ratios less than one, with signals weaker than the noise, can make a big difference.
And you've got modes where if you want to carry on a conversation, because FT8, JT65, these aren't conversational modes.
No, that's for sure.
You're just exchanging signal reports, really. But just the other night, I was on 40 meters, and there was a guy using a digital mode called Olivia, and despite the fact that I could barely hear him, I had very consistent text on the screen, and he was carrying on a true conversation with
yep.
somebody.
Yep.
So there is that, too.
That's very true. There's a very interesting article, and I recommend to people that they look at it, in the October 2017 issue of QST. Take a look again at the article by Carl Lutzel Schwab, K9LA, who's very knowledgeable about propagation. And Carl makes the observation that while conventional wisdom is that signals propagate via the F-layer if they're at a lower frequency than the muff, they actually can propagate at frequencies higher than the muff. The hitch is that they're not direct refraction paths such as we're used to and will be weaker, kind of a semi-scattering effect at the edges of the path. And FT8 can be detected 22 to 26 dB lower than CW.
Yes.
Now, that's a significant difference. So you can take these weak signals and you can work with FT8. And as you say, it's a little different kind of communication. But Carl shows an example of a one-hop 10-meter CW signal that would require a smooth sunspot number of about 50 to be coded by ear on CW. That would be supported using FT8 down to a smooth sunspot number of about 27. That's a big difference. So
yes, it is.
Fewer sunspots, but by using technology developed for the purpose, we can overcome some of the problems. And to be successful at FT8, you just need the free software that's out there from Joe Taylor, who kindly did that for us.
Yep, WSJTX.
Yep. And you need a PC sound card and a computer connected to your radio, just as if you were doing RTTY or FlowScan TV, and you can use the same setup for all those. And the other thing that's very important that I've found, you have to have your PC clock synced to NIST. I forget how many seconds. It's down to the second, though. You really need to have it tightly synced.
Less than 2 seconds, definitely.
It will not work at all if it's outside of that window.
Now, that's for FT8 and JT65 and some of the other modes.
Don't need to do that for the more basic digital mode. Now, I thought that was interesting, and I got my stuff set up to do that. And I actually made a bunch of 12-meter DX contacts using FT8 on, maybe 12 meters, actually, which sounded dead at the time. You can't hear the signals.
Yeah.
And this is very interesting. You can't hear the signals, but there they are. The downside, as you said, it's not really like most ham contacts. There's no rag chewing here. This is strictly your computer can tell that his computer sent a stream of data.
That's about it, yes.
You can't hear it. Your screen lights up and it says it did it. It goes into the logbook of the world and check that one off.
But if you're chasing awards like DXCC and Worked All States, it's a great way to go.
It is. And I must, while some really like that stuff, I must admit it's not my cup of tea being kind of a old timer.
You're a rag chewer. That's what.
No, I'm not a rag chewer, but I like to be able to hear the station I'm working in. But I will accept the confirmations I got from on 12 years from that. It's a very interesting thing to do. So again, that article in October 2017 by K9LA, a very interesting indication of what you can do with FT8, and that's why it's so popular now, because in some cases that's about all you can do. You know, if the conditions are terrible.
That's true.
This gets you past them.
Well, let's take a break for DX Engineering, and we will be back.
And I'll be here.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back, Joel, with a unique question, really. I think so, anyway. This is from Paul, KW1L, and he's asking, I'm in the process of preparing myself for the 20 and 25 word per minute W1AW CW qualifying runs. The certificate requires 1 minute of solid copy that's legible and non-correctable. I can copy 20 words per minute, but I have a problem writing the letters down on paper. In the process of writing a letter, I sometimes miss the next letter. I tried a better pen, lined paper, upper and lowercase letters, script handwriting as distinct from printing, and so on. And he's also a poor typist. Does he have any hope?
I think so. And I guess everybody's different about how they learn things and do things. But I remember having exactly the same problem. I'm happy to share my experiences, which may not be typical or generally effective, but they worked for me. And I think what I do is not the best way or the right way, but I did pass the 30 word per minute W1AW qualification in spite of it. The real answer, I think, is to learn to copy behind a little bit. In other words, rather than writing down the letter as soon as it's sent, if you can get a couple letters behind, so you're kind of buffering the characters in your head and writing down behind them. In that way, you're not hung up by what's happening at the instant that you're copy separately from writing it down. This is hard to imagine, I guess. But
Can you give me an example of what you mean?
Well, let me tell you the story that I think is fascinating. I've known some good Navy CW operators because back in my day, that's the way the Navy used to communicate. Mm. Some of my good friends were in the Navy when I was in the Army and did that sort of thing. I think they stopped doing it perhaps 30 years ago, although some people apparently still do. But supposedly, a good Navy CW operator, and they'd copy directly onto a mill, which looks like a typewriter, but it just does uppercase letters. And supposedly, you could have a conversation with a good Navy CW operator when he has his cans on his head and is copying code. He's talking to you for a while, and when he's done, he turns around in the chair, sits down, and types out the paragraph that came in while you were talking. Absolutely amazing to me.
So he's copying in his head.
He's copying in his head and buffering. And then printing it out on the mill and catching up. And he can type much faster than the code is going. So he can get ahead of it and then get back to his normal rhythm of things. Now, that I've never seen that, but I've heard that and I believe it.
Well, you're not suggesting that Paul do that.
No, because he's not a good typist. That, and he doesn't need to do it because he's not in the Navy. But in my case, there were two changes that I made that got me over the 25 mark. First, I changed from using a pencil to using a ballpoint pen. I found that the reduced drag improved my writing speed. What we're talking about is how fast you can get the character on the paper. If you're copying, especially if you're not copying behind you, you've got to do that because otherwise the character will be over before you get it written down, and then you're trying to write one character and listen to another character, and that's where you get into trouble. Similar problem, by the way, I tried it on a typewriter. In my Army days, I had some night shifts at the microwave station, and I had a tape recorder and some code practice tapes, and I'd sit there with a typewriter and try to do it. And I had the same problem. I'd get to the end of a line, and when I did the carriage return, I'd lose two characters because they came in while the carriage was going. It's the same thing. So if you can copy behind, you can get past that. But anyway, the reduced drag helped by going to a ballpoint pen. Next thing, I used to copy in block letters. I used to do all my writing in block letters, essentially. One of the reasons for that is no one can read my handwriting, not even me. So it's kind of, we get to the store on the shopping list and Nancy says, what was that? What does this say? Anyway, so that's not too good in that regard. But what I discovered was, if you think about it, the shortest code character is the letter E. Dit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the longest character to write.
True.
It takes four distinct pen motions, four straight lines to do that. Now, you can send a lot of E's before you can get that first one written down, and that's a disaster. So what I did is I changed not everything to script, just the letter E to script. So I went to a script E, and that, with a ballpoint pen, goes very quickly. And that made all the difference. And besides, there are lots of E's, so this is not an infrequent problem. It's not like there were Q's or something. So I didn't change the other letters because I can't read them anyway, so it doesn't help. That and practice. By getting more familiar and developing the direct sound-to-hand motion reflex, so that if you get good at this, the way you can tell what the message was is by looking at the paper. You don't actually, it goes through your brain and it comes out as a conditioned reflex on your fingers to write the character. You don't even know what the character was until you look at the paper. Then you know you've eliminated a couple steps of processing there. It makes an automatic reflex. Combat shooters call this muscle memory. So your muscles remember what to do, and it hear a dit, and it makes that script E, and you're on to the next one.
Somewhat like mastering a language, where you really are not translating in your head.
Exactly.
It's directly from the language to the concept.
Exactly right. So in this case, it's directly from the sound to the motion of your hand. And if your brain has to stop and say, let's see, what was that? Well, you've lost three words.
Exactly. And I've seen hams. I mean, ordinary hams, not your Navy friend, but who can listen, just stand there and listen to Morse code coming out of the speaker and then turn to you and tell you what was being said.
Yeah, I can. It's interesting that another story about my experience with CW. When I started to work at ARL in 2003, I decided that I couldn't just be one of these guys with a 2-meter antenna on my car, so I had to get HF mobile too, so I did. After a while, I decided that mobile single sideband wasn't so great because of the same kinds of performance issues we've talked about, and I had the 60-mile drive each way. So I started listening to CW, and it wasn't long before I realized that I could copy in my head while driving. And I can't come back and give you word for word what somebody said, but it's just as if somebody were talking to me and I can hear what they're saying. And that made it feasible to me because you don't want to try to write down the words that are coming in while you're driving. This is not a good idea.
No.
I mean, that's even worse than texting, I think. But you can copy in your head just as if you copy somebody talking to you. And it's actually, I found it easier to send CW than to send with sideband because I had the paddles in the cup holders. And I drive a manual transmission car. So if I need to shift, I just had to move my hand 6 inches to the shift lever instead of putting down the microphone and then moving my hand. So sort of like similar to the copying idea. So I think that copying in your head does not contribute to the muscle memory process that we talked about, but it does increase your familiarization so that you don't have to think about what letter that was. You get
and it takes a lot of practice. I mean, it takes practice, like you said.
Exactly. And especially if you're in the car you're stuck in the car, and it's either listening to radio stations, generally are not as good as they used to be, I think, but listen to CW and listen to conversations. And before you know it, you find that you're copying as if somebody's talking to you. And, of course, because you don't have to write it down, you're also copying at a higher speed. Probably
yes.
Get very quickly get up to higher speeds than you would if you had to write it down. So all of those things help, and I think practice, 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 and you'll get there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.